صباح الخير لكل اللي بيتابعونا في السودان وجنوب السودان والشريط الحدودي. أهلا بكم في جولتنا الصباحية ليوم الاثنين، وفيها تتابعون برنامج قضية اليوم من ثم نشرتنا الإخبارية. كل هذا مستمعينا يأتيكم بعد الفاصل، فكونوا معنا. الآن تتابعون قضية اليوم.
Welcome to Radio Tamazic, dear audience. Today we are going to have an exclusive interview with the European Union outgoing ambassador to South Sudan, Timo Olkinen. He will be talking on various issues that are pertaining the support and also what he expects South Sudan government and its citizens to do going forward. Welcome, Timo Olkinen. This is an exclusive interview specifically to talk about your time in South Sudan.
Yes. My name is Timo Olkonen. I'm the outgoing ambassador of the European Union here in Juba, South Sudan. And I'm coming to the end of my three-year tenure. And it's almost time for me to leave the country.
Ambassador Timo, as your time in South Sudan comes to an end, what would you say were the most defining moments of your tenure?
South Sudan is huge. When you're flying over South Sudan, you're covering, you know, huge distances. And what is quite interesting is that the landscape is to a large extent, you know, empty. You see very little urban habitations. So I think that's something that that surprised me, you know, when I've been working here in South Sudan. But if we're thinking about the content of the work itself, about defining moments, there are some. Obviously, the arrival to the country, you know, presenting credentials to His Excellency the President. But then also some moments that were not that positive. For example, when we had in September last year the extension of the transition period agreed in the RJMEC plenary. I was just coming from Nairobi, attending the Tumaini discussions and meeting with people there, and then I flew the same day to Juba to attend the RJMEC plenary, where then the decision was taken to extend the transition with 2 more years. That kind of stuck in my mind, you know, as a moment that was not positive, but clearly for me was somehow indicative of what was happening in the future.
The EU has been a major supporter of South Sudan in areas like governance, humanitarian aid, and other development areas during your time. Which initiatives are you most proud of, and where do you feel the EU made the biggest impact to the society of South Sudan?
Since, you know, beginning of independence, the EU has rendered aid to about 1.5 billion euro, to the tune of 1.5 billion euro in development cooperation alone, and then in addition comes our humanitarian aid. It's a difficult question to say, where the biggest impact would have been of our aid during my period, because development cooperation, of course, is a long-term engagement. So I've experienced, you know, very important interventions taking place in all these areas: governance, our support to the constitution-making exercise, legal reforms, reform of the judiciary, for example, civil society support, humanitarian aid, obviously life-saving, tremendously important.
Ambassador Timo, as an outgoing EU ambassador to South Sudan, South Sudan faces a complex political and economic, including humanitarian challenges. What were the most difficult diplomatic hurdles you encountered while serving as an ambassador in South Sudan, and how did you navigate them?
Well, the work of a diplomat is really to build bridges between people and between nations, between governments. And so it's all about networking and having contacts with people. I do have to confess that, you know, with our security restrictions in South Sudan that are, you know, there's a good reason why we have restrictions of movement and curfews and so on. But in comparison to my earlier profession, I felt that restricted me establishing some of these connections, and particularly to regular South Sudanese. Of course, official engagements always took place, and they were there. And the access to decision makers sometimes was facilitated and easy, and sometimes not. It a little bit varied during my time here. But I would say that one thing that was a hurdle is the constant change of people. You know, when we had a number of changes in ministerial posts during my tenure, also in governors, so you had to reestablish contacts when you already had a personal relationship with an interlocutor. So that was something that is a little bit unusual in comparison perhaps to other places where I worked.
As we all know, the EU supports independent media in South Sudan. Why is press freedom critical for South Sudan's future? And what more can be done to protect journalists working in South Sudan?
Media freedom, press freedom is absolutely essential, especially when we come to, hopefully, to a time when we will have a more democratic debate about constitution making, about heading towards the elections. I do hope that we will see that time. Then you need to have a space for that democratic debate. And media, as providing access to information, or providing a platform for debate, is absolutely essential. I don't think a democratic society can exist without proper media freedom. So I think that's and we have, like you said, we are supporting media in South Sudan. Recently, we had three journalists that were sent to Kosovo for a training workshop there. But what could be done to protect journalists? I think journalists, are like, basically, of course, they are putting their, possibly taking more risks because they are important conduits of information. But in principle, it comes from guaranteeing their rights.
Ambassador Timo, as you just mentioned, we need a proper debating and also decision-making as people talk about the constitution and the elections. With the election expected in December 2026, do you believe South Sudan is on the right track for credible democratic transition? What role should the EU play for ensure stability during this time?
The process with the democratic transition has been disappointing. It's been frustrating. When I came to the country in September 2022, I was quite enthusiastic because there was the expectation that we would move to constitution making, that we would have the first elections in South Sudan as an independent nation. And this was a very exciting prospect to be part of that kind of processes. And now, unfortunately, at the end of my tenure, we are not there. And in some regards, we have been even taking some steps backwards in the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. But you should never lose hope. We need to move forward. Our call has been to the political leaders to stop unilateral action, go back to the negotiating table, and forge a way forward. It's for the South Sudanese to decide how exactly to do it, and what exactly is the way forward. But obviously, it should be based on the peace agreement and its commitments. And I do hope that we will see more positive action, more serious action, demonstrations of political will, and that we would move to elections. Talking about December 2026, we are already in August 25, so the time is really, really running out, and you need a lot of technical preparations for credible and fair elections. So it's really time to address the political and security deadlock in the country, roll up the sleeves, and start working. The European Union has been there to support the transition. And, for example, we had electoral support, support to constitution-making, the institutions that are following the transitional process, such as the RGMEC. And so the EU has been a committed and supporting partner. But as we move forward, for us to continue rendering the support for the transition, we need to see some seriousness and adherence to the principles of the peace agreement and some serious consensus building on how the nation moves forward.
Ambassador Timo, how can the country shift from the dependency to sustainable development and what lessons can be drawn from the EU-supported programs to the million of South Sudanese still relying on humanitarian aid.
Indeed, aid dependence is a huge challenge, and that's something that I've seen here at a different level than any of my previous postings. And of course, there's a history behind it. It goes back to Operation Lifeline Sudan and so forth, but it boggles the mind that the humanitarian situation is now worse than it has been before in the country's history. So something is wrong, and it needs to be tackled. And the way aid is rendered and how people are helped needs to change. There's a disruption that is happening now because of change in donor attitudes and donor approaches towards giving aid. Also for the European Union, it will be difficult, to continue as we did before, because all the global competing priorities that we have and with resources that are finite. So I believe that there will be a disruption in the way and the volume of aid being rendered. What I think is important is to draw lessons from past experiences and as much as possible move towards sustainable solutions. This requires the government to play its part in a way that is much more serious than hitherto. Outside donors cannot be relied on providing the social services and humanitarian aid forever. We need more proper, transparent finance management from the government, and these resources also then to be channeled to the service of the people. Again, we are talking about government responsibilities. Like I said, we have been there also on infrastructure development. But in order for a real change to happen, we need a change for the better in the security environment.
Ambassador, South Sudan has one of the youngest population in the world. How crucial is youth and women's participation in shaping the country's future? What initiatives gives you hope in this regard?
Indeed, yeah. Like more than 70% of South Sudan's population are young people, youth. So it's absolutely essential that women and youth are part of the decision making of shaping the country's future. There is a 30% quota for women, which is most often not adhered to. My engagement with youth in South Sudan has been encouraging. That those are some of the issues that give hope. There's this cultural movement in South Sudan that has the slogan "Anataban," I am tired. Like you know, I think people are tired of how things have been and how they are. Have been handled, but I think sometimes see a lot of initiative and enthusiasm coming from the youth. When you frequent places like the seniors hub or universities, you get in addition to that frustration, you have energy, and you have the feeling of young people waiting to be able to influence the issues and engage in these really important processes such as elections or constitution making. So when the situation is unlocked and they get to get the space to express their opinions and make their choices, I think that's the moment when South Sudan will take off.
Ambassador, previously during your time, you have engaged with various political leaders, civil society, and grassroots communities, as you mentioned before. How would you describe your working relationship with the South Sudan's government, and where are the moments of the breakthrough or frustration during your time?
Well, we have gone through a number of ups and downs through my 3 years here, and of course that has been reflected in our relationship with the government. I think our relations have always been cordial. They have been friendly, but often we have had to pass some critical voices. Critical messages and indeed at times very critical. Now we are again in a time since March actually when we are very much concerned about the whole collapse of the peace agreement and the continued violations of the ceasefire. So I think it's very important that we are in a situation where we can discuss frankly about these issues, convey our concerns, but of course we also listen. My father used to say that a person has two ears and one mouth for a reason, and that's for listening more than speaking. But indeed, and listening to civil society and grassroots communities, like you referred to, is also extremely important. So you can take into account the views of the wider society when you are thinking about policy options and your engagement also with the government.
Beyond diplomacy, what personal connection or cultural experiences in South Sudan will you take with you as you go back to Europe, and any memorable encounters that change your perspective?
Like I said in the beginning, you know, like the whole the sheer size of the country was something that opened my eyes. And in connection to that, there's a magnificent cultural diversity. So when I've been traveling in the country, and then, you know, sometimes during my travels, there was a cultural component. If not, then there was a cultural gain, at least a cultural engagements, you know, on arrival and so, music and dances. I jumped over the bull, you know, a number of times, for example. So there have been many memorable moments also outside of Juba, also inside Juba. And I had the great privilege of seeing the huge national parks like Padingilo and Boma from the air. And I witnessed also the Nile migration of hundreds of thousands of antelopes from the air. And that's something that will always stay for me, because South Sudan is the only place in the world where you can experience anything like that. So there's many memorable moments that I've had, you know, too many to be listed here.
Mm-hmm. After 3 years serving in South Sudan, it's your time to go. What would you wish your successor, where do you wish to pick up from, and what would you want to see happening going forward?
Well, what I really want to see is like what we try to keep in mind, myself and also the EU delegation here, is the longer-term perspective. And like I said, I think we have seen steps backwards, and we are really trying to encourage South Sudan and its government to get on track and tackle these issues that require urgent attention so that we don't lose more time. But I would also say that South Sudan is an extremely wealthy country. And I'm not only talking about oil. In some ways, oil has been more a curse than a resource to South Sudan. But having seen the agricultural potential, you know, the soil, the water, having been informed about other mineral riches in the country, having seen the amazing biological biodiversity, not only the antelopes, but what exists in the border regions to DRC and Uganda in terms of rainforests and so. So these are amazing natural resources that some other countries would be very envious about. And the question is that these...
Ambassador, as you bid farewell, what is your biggest hope for South Sudan and also the people, especially directly the South Sudanese people, as you bear farewell to them?
Indeed, like I said, you know, my biggest hope is that we will get an end to violence. I think this is our primary concern at the moment, that peace will prevail. The current situation is risky. We had the UN Security Council debating the situation in South Sudan just yesterday, and there was this scenario presented that violence could spiral out of control. So the most important thing is now to stop that development and revert back to the negotiating table, stop the unilateral actions, and make sure that South Sudan doesn't experience some of the bad things it has experienced in the past, but rather start really now moving forward to the future. Like I said, harnessing those wonderful natural resources that they have and moving forward with them. That requires security and good governance. And after that, I think South Sudan could be quickly grow into a place that would be quite different from from what it is still today. As a final word, I would want to thank everyone. I had the pleasure and the privilege of working with South Sudanese from different walks of life in different locations, and it has been a great experience. I've learned a lot. I'm hopeful, and I'm certain I'm going to follow what is going to happen in South Sudan in the future.
Ambassador Timo, we would like to thank you as a Radio Tamazight Society, and we wish you well as you depart from South Sudan, maybe into a different assignment. We wish you well. Thank you so much for your time that you have been able to also connect with us during your time in South Sudan. We would like to say thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity of addressing the public.
أهلا بكم مجددا مستمعينا ولكل من انضم إلينا في جولتنا الصباحية هذا ببرنامج قضية اليوم. نصل وياكم لموعد متابعة نشرتنا الإخبارية من راديو تمازوج. إذن إلى الاستديوهات.
مستمعين راديو تمازج أينما كنتم أصاد الله أوقاتكم، نحييكم من راديو تمازج ونقرأ لحضراتكم نشرة الأخبار وفيها تتابعون. لجنة العقوبات بالأمم المتحدة تحذر جنوب السودان من تعثر اتفاق السلام. أزمة إنسانية متصاعدة تحدد ملايين الأطفال في جنوب السودان. وزارة البيئة في جوبا تحذر من استخدام مياه الأمطار بعد تحولها إلى اللون الأسود. وفي السودان الأمم المتحدة تعلن مقتل 89 شخصا في الفاشر. من مقدمة النشر إليكم التفاصيل من راديو تمازج. حذرت اللجنة العقوبات التابعة لمجلس الأمن الدولي جميع الأطراف في جنوب السودان من تعثر اتفاق السلام، وشدد على ضرورة الإسراء في تنفيذه. جاء تحذير بناء على توصيات من فريق خبراء أممي بعد أن قدم تقريره النهائي لمجلس الأمن في الأول من يوليو. ودعت اللجنة بشكل خاص قادة جنوب السودان إلى ضبط النفس والإسراء في توحيد القوات الأمنية واستكمال تدريب الجيش الوطني، كما أدانت جميع الحجمات التي تستهدف موظفي الأمم المتحدة والعاملين في المجال الإنساني. كما دعت اللجنة الدول الأعضاء إلى منع انتهاكات حظر الأسلحة المفروضة على جنوب السودان، وحثت سلطات الجمارك العالمية على توخي اليقظة بشأن واردات الأخشاب والفحم من جنوب السودان ودول المجاورة، محذرة من تزوير وثائق التصدير. وفقا للجنة الأمم المتحدة لحقوق الإنسان، فإن اتفاق السلام المنشط لعام 2018 الذي أنحى حربا أهلية استمرت لخمس سنوات معرض لخطر الانحيار ما لم تتدخل القوى الإقليمية بشكل عاجل، ويأتي ذلك في إطار استمرار الاشتباكات المتفرقة ووضع النائب الأول رئيس رياك مشار قيد الإقامة الجبرية في مارس الماضي، مما أثار مخاوف من تجدد حالة عدم الاستقرار. أعلن كل من ألمانيا وهولندا والاتحاد الأوروبي عن توسيع مشروع التنمية الريفية الموجهة من المجتمع ليشمل مقاطعة جوبا بولاية الاستوائية الوسطى، ويهدف المشروع إلى دعم تطوير سلاسل قيمة زراعية قادرة على التكييف مع المناخ وتحسين الانتاج الزراعي. يبلغ التمويل المشروع 48 مليون يورو، ويدعم 27,500 ألف أسرة في 8 مقاطعات مختلفة. يركز المشروع على تحسين الانتاج وتسهيل الوصول لخدمات والأسواق وتمكين النساء والشباب. خلال حفل إطلاق التوصف في جوبا، أكدت وزيرة الزراعة والبيئة والقابات في ولاية الاستوائية الوسطى ليلى كابوكي على أهمية هذا المشروع في تحسين الأمن الغذائي والتغذوي لأسر الصغيرة. كما أكدت ممثلة الاتحاد الأوروبي أن المبادرة تم تطويرها بالتعاون مع الوزارة الألمانية والبعثة الهولندية، ويتم تنفيذها من قبل الوكالة الألمانية للتعاون الدولي. لا زالت النشرة تأتيكم من راديو تمازج. وجهت وزارة البيئة في جوبا تحذيرا للمواطنين بعد أن تحولت مياه الأمطار التي هطلت الجمعة الماضي إلى اللون الأسود، وقد أثار هذا التحول مخاوف واسعة بين السكان الذي فاجأهم لون المياه الداكن في الحاويات والمجاري الصرفة في جميع أنحاء المدينة. من جهته أوضح وكيل وزارة البيئة الوطنية جوزيف أفريكانو أن التلوث ناتج عن الدخان الكثيف من حرق النباتات الذي يتساقط في الغلاف الجوي ويتفاعل مع السحب، وأكد على أن المياه الملوثة وغير آمنة للشرب أو الاستخدام المنزلي. ودعا أفريكان المواطنين إلى الامتنائين عن استخدام مياه الأمطار، مشيرا إلى أن الوزارة ستقوم بجريمة تقييم بيئي رسمي للمشكلة، وقد ربط نشطاء مدنيون هذه ظاهرة بحرق الفحم على نطاق واسعة كوسيلة لكسب الدخل، محذرين من عواقب وخيمة على البيئة. أعلنت الأمم المتحدة أن ما لا يقل عن 89 شخصا قتلوا في هجمات على مدنين في الفاشر السودانية ومخيم جاور للنازيين خلال 10 أيام حتى 20 من أغسطس. وأكد مكتب حقوق الإنسان التابع للأمم المتحدة أن هجمات نفذتها قوات الدعم السريع. وصرح المتحدث باسم المكتب جيرمي لورنس عن العدد الفعلي للضحايا قد يكون أعلى، وأشار إلى أن 16 حالة من الضحايا كانت إعداما بإجراءات مؤجزة، وأضاف أن هذا النمط من الهجمات على المدنيين يثير قلقا بالغا بشأن العنف ذو الدوافع العرقية. في سياق متصل، أعلنت منظمة الصحة العالمية أن الفاشر تعاني من أزمة إنسانية صحية حادة، حيث يواجه المدنيون نقصا حادا في الغذاء وارتفاعا في وفيات سوء التغذية، كما تشهد المدينة تفشيا كبيرا للكوليرا مما يزيد الضغط على الخدمات الصحية الحشة بالفعل. في خبر الأخير في هذه النشرة، حذرت منظمة أنقذ الأطفال الخيرية من أن ملايين الأطفال في جنوب السودان معرضون لخطر سوء التغذية الحادة وحرمان من الخدمات الأساسية. يأتي هذا التحذير بعد أن اضطرت منظمة الإغاثة لتغليص عملياتها بسبب تخفيضات كبيرة في التمويل. ووصف داني جلين رايت الرئيس التنفيذي للمنظمة في كندا الوضع بأنه أزمة متعددة الأوجه ناتجة عن النزاع والتغير المناخي والارتفاع الحائل في تكاليف المعيشة، وأوضح أن أثار تخفيضات التمويل واضحة في برامج الصحة والتغذية والتعليم. وفي مدينة بور على سبيل المثال، انخفض عدد مراكز التغذية من 22 مركزا إلى 15 فقط، مما يحرم العديد من الأطفال من العلاج، كما أن هناك 2.3 مليون طفل دون سن الخامس معرضون لخطر سوء التغذية الحاد. وتعمل المراكز الحالية بعدد أقل من الموظفين، وقد تضطر إلى رفض استقبال للمزيد من الحالات. وأشار أدريان بوستر من المنظمة في سويسرا إلى أن الأزمة ترهق نظاما صحيا مرهقا بفعل، خاصة مع تدفق أكثر من 1.2 مليون لاجئ من السودان، بالإضافة إلى مليون شخص نازحين داخليا. وقد أدى هذا التدفق إلى تغليص حصص الإعاشة ونقص الغذاء. من جهته، أوضع كريستوفر نياماندي المدير القطري للمنظمة في جنوب السودان أن العنف ضد الأطفال ما زال منتشرا، بما في ذلك حالات الاختطاف والتجنيد في الجماعات المسلحة والعنف الجنسي والذوات المبكر. وفي ختام البيان، دعت المنظمة إلى تمويل دولي عاجل لمنع حدوث المزيد من التدهور في الوضع الإنساني، مؤكدة أن أطفال جنوب السودان يريدون فقط أن يكونوا أطفالا ويلعبون مع أصدقائهم وأن يكونوا في المدارس. بهذا قرأنا لكم الأخبار من راديو تماذي، شكرا لكم لحسن الاستماع، عودة لبقية برامجنا.
بالنشرة مستمعينا، أن احنا بنكون وصلنا لختام جولتنا الصباحية من راديو تمازج، وللمزيد تابعوا موقعنا على الانترنت www.radiotamazuch.org أو صفحتينا على مواقع التواصل الاجتماعي الفيسبوك ومنصة إكس. نشكر لكم حسن المتابعة وإلى اللقاء.